Hello, I am Emma, the 11th Duchess of Rutland, and this is Duchess, a podcast in which I explore the most historic homes of the UK and meet the inspiring women who lead them. As a daughter of a Welsh farmer, I grew up far away from the glamour and wealth of aristocracy, but my life changed forever when I fell in love and married my husband, the 11th Duke of Rutland. Suddenly, one of Britain's most historic buildings was not only my home, but under my care. I wanted to hear the stories of other women like me, the custodians of these great homes. So in this podcast, I will travel to breathtaking homes and meet the inspiring women who lead these estates today. Please join me on this special journey. This is Duchess, the podcast. Merseyside has contributed so much to British culture, music, sport, and the arts. But one of the most majestic and enduring contributions is the fabulous Knowsley Hall. Within its 2,500 acres is not only the manor house, but the majestic lakes, the cascading forestry, and its fabulous safari park. With its striking red brick Georgian facade, Knowsley Hall teems with beautiful examples of Jacobean, Baroque, and Victorian interiors. Like the impressive hall, the Earls of Derby, who have called Knowsley their home for some 500 years, have a storied, immense history. I travelled to the historic home, meeting Lady Derby, to hear more about Knowsley's connection to former prime ministers, iconic writers, and its unmatched sporting pedigree. Lady Derby, formerly an assistant surveyor to the Queen's pictures, has an immaculate eye for art. Like her family, she's a wonderful horsewoman. And like the Derbys themselves, she's an excellent ambassador for heritage. Hello.
Hello.
Lovely to see you. Caroline, or is it?
My friends call me Cassie.
Okay.
It's my nickname.
Although people would imagine we know each other, we haven't actually properly met many times before.
No, we've been so busy in our own lives.
We have. It doesn't always happen.
No.
But we share, as I'm sure I'm going to find out, many, many things in common. So I'm delighted that you joined me today. And thank you so much. So Lady Derby today is kindly hosting us in her home at Knowsley Hall. But this has not always been your home. Tell me about where life began for you.
I grew up in Essex. I grew up the daughter of a great house, which is called Audley End, which is a tiny bit bigger than this. I'd go and see my grandfather once a week and have tea, always changed into a skirt. Never saw me in jeans in my entire life. He was a great collector, and I used to talk to him about the art collection that he had. That gave me a love of art history, so I then went and studied history of art and history at London University.
Goodness.
And then I sent my thesis to the surveyor of the Queen's pictures, who was a man called Sir Oliver Miller at the time. And Sir Oliver Miller very kindly invited me to tea at Buckingham Palace.
Goodness.
So he talked to me about Velasquez and Van Dyck and all those sort of things. And then he suddenly said, so tell me, is that rather interesting Nella underneath the coffin staircase at Audley End? And I looked at him and I thought, how does he know the connection? Because I hadn't
said who you were.
Said who I was at all. I'd just sent in a piece of work. And it's funny the way life is, because he turned round to me and said, your grandfather was incredibly kind to me when I was your age.
Oh my goodness.
So most people wouldn't get invited to tea at Buckingham Palace, but I suppose he saw, I was a Neville, I suppose he saw the name and thought, I'm going to be kind to this girl because
how wonderful.
She might be connected with the family who are kind to me. I started off as picture researcher. Then I did the exhibitions and I was also research assistant to Michael Levy. I worked for the Royal Collection for 9 years and I was assistant surveyor of the Queen's pictures, which meant that I was responsible for the hangs in the palaces and castles, but also the exhibitions. So I took paintings on exhibitions, say to the Met. I once took 13 Canalettos over to New York, which was
scary.
Scary, but a wonderful opportunity.
Wonderful. And growing up, as you did, with this family and with the connection of art and so forth, were there many of you in the family?
My father married several times, and I'm one of eight daughters.
Eight daughters?
Yes. He wanted a son.
Yes. And hadn't...
There was a title and he wanted a son.
Yeah. And did the title die out after...
No, it's gone to a cousin.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you meet your husband?
I met him at a friend's wedding, Harry Dalmeny's wedding, and he was with Tiggy Legg Burke. And he said, "Who's that girl?" And she said, "Oh, she's a very old friend of mine. That's Cassie Neville. Do you want me to arrange a meeting?"
How lovely. So that was how he first met you in 1994.
We got married in 1995.
And you were married where?
At Audley End.
Wonderful. Yeah. So at home.
Yeah. And David Starkey, who the renowned historian, when he heard that we were engaged, my husband and I, he thought it was an arranged marriage because it was two of the oldest families in England getting married. And actually, to this day, I just still have to convince him it's a love match rather than, you know, the Nevilles and the Stanleys getting married.
How extraordinary.
Yeah.
And which countess are you?
I'm the 19th.
So that was 535 years of being earls and countesses.
Yes.
That's extraordinary. Is that one of the oldest peerages in Britain?
I think the Shrewsburys are 1 year older.
So once you were married, you then, I guess, did you arrive here?
I arrived here and...
It wasn't always... As it is today?
No, this house was rented out to Merseyside Police for 30 years. And when I came here in 1995, it was still rented to the police. They used it for covert operations and fraud and all sorts of other things. So this was a living, working office.
So it was threadbare?
Threadbare actually doesn't even cover it.
Goodness.
It was hideous. This room actually was just empty, but I did restore the state dining room first before the police moved out because it was used as a picture store and it just had hundreds and hundreds of pictures just all piled up. So I did design that hang first. And I think possibly if I'd had a normal job, I would have been intimidated by it, but I just didn't think twice about rolling up my sleeves and going into the stores because I'd spent 9 years in the royal palaces finding things and rolling up my sleeves, basically.
So it just came very naturally.
Yes, I'm embarrassed to say it did. Well, it didn't come naturally. I just wasn't intimidated by the scale of it, which is probably
terrified me.
I think that's the remarkable thing, is that the scale of everything here is just big. The gardens are big, the house is big, and it's hard work.
Can we just describe this room, Hazzy, for one moment, because it's quite magnificent.
So this is the walnut drawing room. The panelling was here, but not the pictures and none of the furniture. So what I've had to do is bring furniture from other parts and make it feel homely as well as be able to be used for events.
You've got how many bedrooms?
Well, now we've got 20 bedrooms with ensuite bathrooms. But when I first restored this house, there were, 40 or 50 bedrooms, but not all with ensuite bathrooms. Mm. Because in those days, you know, an ensuite bathroom wasn't part of the dynamics of a great house.
Yeah.
I mean, Audley End, even up to the Second World War, didn't have a bathroom. Still, people had bowls in their room and hot water was brought in
by
the bucket. Mm.
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
And it feels so homely, can I say. So all your work that you've done has absolutely paid off, because one wouldn't think that you'd had Merseyside Police in here. Just how many years
in
ago now?
97 they moved out.
Extraordinary. What happened to Knowsley Hall during the wars? Was it used as for occupation, or was it lived in?
The Western approaches were at Derby House. The Battle of the Atlantic was run from there. And it's actually bigger than the Cabinet War Rooms down in London. So Derby House in Liverpool was where the Battle of the Atlantic was actually run from. And so if that was bombed, they were going to come here. So they had the state dining room, the room, the really big dining room here, has a wall big enough to have plotted where the ships were going to be.
Goodness, fascinating. But the family were still had a wing that they were living in.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. You obviously studied history of art.
Yes.
So you had an idea about the design and the period of the furniture and furnishings. Have you had help with this?
Well, my sister helped me a bit because she's a decorator, but she was always having babies at the same time as me. And so she couldn't help me that much.
No.
So I've done it mostly feeling my way with local tradesmen.
And so like us, you're very keen on using local.
Yes.
Yeah. And local curtain makers.
Local curtain maker, local everything.
Local. Because you sometimes when we're sitting in this very grand drawing room looking out on your Capability Brand landscape and fabulous gardens, which we'll come to in a moment, forget that we're just 13 miles from Liverpool.
Yes.
And I have to be honest, I have not been to Liverpool. But I'm guessing it's fabulous.
No, it's got more Georgian buildings than Bath. It's got several universities there. It's got a thriving, vibrant artistic and cultural scene. And in fact, the only museum which is a national museum outside London, the Walker Art Gallery, is in Liverpool.
Wonderful. Do you feel totally at ease and comfortable with your surroundings here? Or are there times when you just want to crawl away and find, like me, the back corridor?
When I came here, there wasn't one photograph of John and Isabel Darby because she'd died. She'd also been shot by the footman and left this house.
Oh, goodness. She survived?
She survived, yes. But then she didn't come back to this house for 14 years. So I would say that the obstacle that I had when I came here was the fact that there wasn't female influence. And so there hadn't really been a Lady Derby for 30 years who'd had any influence in this house. So it was a very male-dominated sort of hierarchy.
Yes. Did you have any obstructions to doing the things that you wanted to do?
Well, yes, probably the biggest obstruction is the family motto is sans changer, which means you can't change anything.
Oh, my God.
So I took a coach and horses through that because I wanted to modernise it.
Yes.
And make it relevant.
Yeah.
And the first thing I did actually was decorate the back corridors. Before I did the front of the house, I decorated the back corridors because I felt that the people who help us should be comfortable at work. So that was the first thing I did. And then I did my bedroom. But I think what I've tried to do is to make myself at ease here, is to put my own personal stamp and make it feel home to me, because I can only manage feeling at home if I feel comfortable here.
Good answer. I wish you'd been there to advise me. So everything is beginning to steer me that you're an incredibly grounded lady.
I don't know what that means. I get on with the job, I suppose.
Exactly. Maybe being one of eight daughters made you that from a very young age.
Yes, and also I think because my parents got divorced, we ended up having to follow our own
instincts
and make the best of opportunities that came.
Yeah, whatever they may be.
Lady Derby certainly strikes me as not only a person who always makes the best of every opportunity, but as a principled woman with a powerful sense of duty. I was so impressed by how well-spoken and knowledgeable she was. You've been listening to Duchess, the podcast presented by me, Emma Rutland, and produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. I wanted to learn more about her personal journey within these walls, the proud equestrian tradition of the Derbys, and I was so keen to uncover Knowsley Hall's astonishing connection with Shakespeare. But first, I quizzed the Countess on her family's extraordinary political impact.
The Stanleys, it is said, were some of the most illustrious and prominent families of British history. Your family have had this tremendous impact on British politics. Tell us a little bit about the family's greatest achievements.
We probably don't have enough time to talk about the whole family's history because they have done extraordinary things. Politics-wise, the 14th Earl, who was Prime Minister three times to Queen Victoria, and he's not the most well-known Prime Minister, but in terms of significance, what he did is he passed the Reform Act for the abolition of slavery.
Goodness. So a principled man.
Yes. So, and his diaries of him travelling around America show how much he found slavery to be appalling.
How extraordinary. Mm. It strikes me, looking through the notes that I've been making, how principled the family are on so many levels through history. It seems to be a vein that runs through the blood.
Doing the right thing, you feel your way.
Yeah. The Derby family have had a long and lustrous relationship between man and horse.
Well, yes. I mean, the clue is in the name. You might think it was just the 12th Earl who had the horse race named after him in 1470. But in fact, Ferdinando, who was the 5th Earl, he had horse races, and the 7th Earl. And there was, in fact, a race course in this park. And there's a picture on the wall in the entrance hall by Tillemans, which is horses racing within the park. The Earls of Derby were kings of the Isle of Man for 300 years, and they held horse races over there. But we have always been associated with horses, and even in my husband's lifetime, we have bred a classic winner. The 17th Earl won the Derby three times, and I think probably if you ask my husband what one of his aims is, would be to win the Derby.
Oh, how lovely. The Earl of Derby winning the Derby.
Yes.
How wonderful. But you yourself are a very keen horsewoman.
Yes, I've ridden all my life, and some of the great highs and lows of my life have been on a horse. Unfortunately, I had a sister who died when she was 15 and I was 16 from a riding accident. But then I did get back on a horse a few months after she died and realised how important it is to live, breathe, laugh again. So horses have always been just part of my spirit and my being. For my sins, I compete because I always do everything to one level, which is a high level if I can. And so I've become a dressage rider in my later years, which is a bit bonkers because most of the people I'm riding against are 40 years younger than me.
How amazing. And where do you compete?
I compete nationally. I'd like to compete internationally. I'd like to have the little flag on my back at one point. But
oh my goodness, Lady Derby, that is extraordinary. So did you ride as a child?
Yes.
And all sisters rode?
Yes.
So were you like me in the pony club?
Yes.
For those people listening who think we've gone completely mad, what is the pony club? Well, most country people are connected on a very different level to those who don't live in the countryside. So it is pretty classless, the countryside, isn't it, Cassie? Because I'm a farmer's daughter and you are the daughter of an earl. correct?
A lord, yeah.
A lord. Mm. So, but we could well have met on a field in Pony Club.
In a tent.
In a tent, in the back yes. of a horse box.
Yes.
And that's generally where most friendships were made, because you realised at a very young age, you were generally on the same page as most, but some were more competitive than others.
It was just great fun.
It was.
We used to go swimming with our ponies at the Pony Club. You know, the first bit of discipline, probably the first kiss, was always at the Pony Club.
At the Pony Club. I'm with you all the way. And so at the Pony Club, you were which number, sister?
Number two.
Number two. There's lots of things now, isn't there, about where you came in the family and the sort of personality of you as an individual. How would you describe yourself as a girl within that unit?
Goodness. Well, my elder sister takes her role at being the eldest very seriously, so she's quite bossy. And number two, you're always trying to find your way.
Really? Yeah. So quite rebellious?
No, trying to keep up.
Trying to keep
yeah,
up.
Make your way.
Yeah. Fascinating. And how does your older sister look at you now doing this job?
She's actually very supportive. If she thinks I'm getting a bit uppity, she brings me down.
Classic older sister yeah. stuff.
When I first came up here, she thought I ate chocolates and read Vogue magazine, which is simply not part of my day. Well, the chocolates are at the end of the day. You know, she's my confidant.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
Tell us about your Shakespeare connection.
Well, Shakespeare allegedly was patronised by the 4th, 5th and 6th Earl. And what I'm concentrating on at the moment is trying to actually pin down where Shakespeare's missing years were spent. Because there is this time after the plague of 94 that all of the theatres were shut and nobody quite knows where Shakespeare went. He didn't go to Stratford, and because of his Catholic tendencies, he left London, and we think he came up north, and we're trying to prove that he came here. So we know that William Kemp, who was one of the artists, the Shakespeare actors, not artists, was travelling with him, was at the 4th Earl's funeral. So far in the 4th Earl's funeral document, we found that William Kemp was wearing the 4th Earl's clothes, his livery at the funeral. The 5th Earl was the patron of the time for Shakespeare, because his father was steward at the Royal Court, so spent a lot of his time there. And then there weren't so many theatres. It was very much travelling players, and the King's Men and the Chamberlain's Men were very much court theatre companies. And Shakespeare was in that under the patronage of Lord Strange, who was Ferdinando, later the 5th Earl of Derby.
Goodness. Well, I'll be coming back, and I'm definitely going to be buying a ticket to come and see that Shakespearean first production that you have just outside the walls here of your Capability Brand landscape here at Knowsley Hall. To many people listening today, what they will think, well, you're surrounded by lots of help and staff and people who do things. What is your day like?
I am surrounded by people who help us, and actually that's part of the privilege and the benefit of being in these places, because you have a community that you are very codependent on and with. We run a little mini, for better or worse, sort of social welfare state, in the fact that some of them live in our houses, work for us. It's very hard to describe estate life without realizing it is very codependent.
On each other.
On each other. And I think that's probably the thing that I found most difficult during the coronavirus lockdown, because suddenly everyone had to isolate to protect themselves from the virus. And it was actually very lonely not having the people around who, you know, I'm used to living with lots of people.
Around you.
Yes.
And everyone having a part to play.
A part to play, yes.
And so, but that didn't stop you. And during the difficult times of the coronavirus, how did you deal with that?
there was not much grandeur in our life at that point. No, we were all helping.
Yeah. And that's the key thing.
It was a team effort.
Yeah.
And this is partly because our family business, the revenue comes from the safari park. And unfortunately, it was shut for 3 months.
So no money coming in?
No money at all coming in. And so because of compliance, looking after the animals, some of the staff were kept on to help feed and look after the animals. The safari park was shut for 3 months, but the animals were very well cared for, but they did miss the public. And then some people chose to stay with us and help look after the houses. And we became this little hardcore team, keeping it all going, which was family and staff. Like I'm sure you'll realise at Beaver Castle, you know, these houses, you know, cost a lot of money. They need people to run them just because, you know, the distances. We have to have kind people to help us, whether you call them a waiter, a butler, an events assistant, just because the kitchens are several hundred metres away from where you end up eating. So for an event or a product launch here, you need not quite an army of staff, but you do need a few people to help you. And therefore, you know, it's paying the wages.
Exactly. And presumably, just from a security point of view, having people in the house is important.
Well, I think it brings life to the house.
Yeah, absolutely. And during the pandemic, it was a very small team of people that had surrounded you for many years, and you all just rolled up your sleeves and got on with the job at hand. Yeah. But you became a very tight-knit family in the end.
Yes.
But I often went back into the archives and looked at how the family operated during the wars, and it was not dissimilar, where the family was right down to a sort of bare backbone of health.
Well, I suppose what is similar between the war and the coronavirus is, I feel personally that the role of the woman was really important in lockdown, because you had to really be inspired and keep the show on the road.
Yes.
In a war, you had a visible enemy that the men went off to fight. But with the pandemic, it's an invisible enemy. And I don't know about your sons and your husband, but certainly in our family, they were very stressed because it was an invisible enemy that they, it was the uncertainty, not knowing how to deal with it, relying on government and scientific advice. And there was no right way. And I think what we did here is we tried to work our way out of it with physical exertion.
Yes.
So we just did a lot of weeding.
Really?
A lot of weeding and cleaning. And,
well, the gardens look immaculate. So that brings me really onto, Kazi, how you find living in a home that is open to the public.
Well, there are good and bad bits. When you've just had a baby, it's not so great because you want to sort of cuddle up with your baby in the bedroom and you don't want to be running into people when you're in your dressing gown. So I think it's not so great when, you know, you're ill or whatever. But most of the time, I find it fun.
Because you love people.
I love people.
Well, that's really helpful, because I find myself avoiding people as much as I can and running around the castle through the back corridors. But the fact that you love people is wonderful.
But I think also these houses, they need to reinvent themselves to be relevant in this era, as they have had to do, you know, for years and years and years, whether it was Cromwellian times or after the First World War or the Second World War. You know, they were used by armies and occupations during these times and then came back to the family because the family felt that duty of care, wanting to preserve it for the next generation.
And really, what these homes are about is about their community, because you touched on it earlier, Kazi, but They were very much the social security yes. for their surrounding area.
Part of the reason why we restored this house after the police moved out is we wanted to make it a figurehead for the estate again and like be the central nucleus for the wider estate so that it was somewhere that they could particularly envisage as being the centre of the family, the estate, and our role.
And the head of your community.
Yes.
Yeah. So if you were able to, at this moment, speak to the ancestors of the past that have done and been in your shoes, is there anything you'd say to them?
Crikey. I would ask whether Shakespeare had actually worked here. I think that's probably the focus for me right now.
Yeah. So if there's anyone up there listening, that's what she needs answering to. And as the 19th Countess of Derby, what would the message you would give to the 26th Countess of Derby?
I would like to give her a big hug and give her enormous amounts of encouragement because I didn't have a mother-in-law who lived here. I've got a mother-in-law who never grew up here. So I have been very reliant on the community that I work with to help me find my way. I would also say to her not to take herself too seriously, not to be frightened of hard work, and admit it when you're wrong, but remember that you're always right.
I love that.
And being true to yourself.
Love it. God bless you.
What I will take most away from my meeting with the Countess is her absolute devotion to heritage. Lady Derby has such a forward-looking mindset, and it's so inspiring to get an insight into her own personal story and the wonderful history that surrounds her at Knowsley Hall. Thank you so much, Lady Derby, for entertaining me with your fabulous home today. And thank you all at home for joining us and listening. So next time, I will be speaking to the wonderful Lady Mansfield of Scone Palace. Lady Mansfield explains why Scone was the palace where all Scottish kings were crowned. We learn the story behind Marie Antoinette's writing desk, and we hear the amazing tale of Britain's first black aristocrat, Elizabeth Dido Bell. This episode is an absolute must to listen to, so join me there. Couple of quick notes before we go. Important ones. Make sure you subscribe to Duchess the podcast so you get automatically notified about new episodes wherever you listen to a podcast. I want to know about you and what you think of the show, so please be sure to send me your comments and tell me about your own lineage and the women who have inspired you in your life. Please write to me on duchess@duchessthepodcast.com. And if there are any stately homes in particular you'd like me to visit, do send your suggestions to me as soon as possible. I've started a newsletter that includes all this and more and comes straight to your inbox. It's really easy to sign up at duchessthepodcast.com. You've been listening to Duchess, the podcast, presented by me, Emma Rutland, the Duchess of Rutland, produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. From Beaver Castle, Lady Violet Manners is the executive producer. From One Fine Play, James Bishop is the executive producer. Kasra Ferruzia is the audio and visual engineer. Connor Foley is the editorial producer and researcher. Additional creative support from Selena Christofis and Theo Banner. Thanks for listening to Duchess, the podcast.